This is Tom McConnell.
7 minutes after 11 o'clock. This is News Talk 1290 CJBK and News Talk 610 CKTB. CJBK listeners, you're no stranger to our next guest. And CKTV listeners, you've had the pleasure of hearing her over the past number of months. Nutritional consultant, healthy living expert, healthy living advocate, I should say. Pam Colleen, how are you?
I'm good, Tom. How are you today?
I am excellent. At least London's going to be able to hear you, even though Andy's off this week. We're making sure London can still hear your words of advice.
Yeah, it's too bad we're going to miss Andy this week, but here I am nonetheless.
Well, everyone needs a vacation.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone needs some time off. Everyone needs to catch up on their sleep. One of the great things in the last couple of weeks, of course, when we change the clocks and we fall back, everyone's thinking, oh, I get that extra hour of sleep. Oh, thankfully I can get a little more sleep. As the nights come a little earlier and, you know, it's darker longer as we head into winter, we seem to be getting, or at least, you know, we're going to try to get a little more sleep. Maybe we can catch up on our sleep. But our busy lifestyles never allow us to. That we're being pulled here and there, and there's distractions all the time, and the kids, and, oh, what's on TV tonight? And then we don't end up getting a good night's sleep. Let me ask you, why is it important for our body to get sleep? What goes on in the body when we're sleeping?
Oh, my goodness. There's so many things that are happening during the night when you're resting. It basically amounts to your body's time to restore itself, to build itself. So it's a very, very crucial time in the day, in the 24-hour period of time. So what happens, of course, is your hormones work at a circadian level. So you have rhythms that are going on with regards to how your hormones are produced, whether they're high or they're low during the evening or at night when you're sleeping. And then you have times of during the night where you're actually detoxifying. And so if you're not sleeping well, a lot of different systems are going to be compromised. And unfortunately, if you don't have a good restorative sleep at night, you're going to wake up exhausted. And the next day, you're not going to be as productive during the day at work. So it compromises your life for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, if you don't have consistent restorative sleep.
We'll talk about testosterone a little later on in a different subject matter, but I read just recently that that's the primary time when, for men, we produce testosterone is at night when your body's at total rest, that then can dedicate the energy to converting cholesterol into testosterone. Is that what happens?
Well, every hormone will sort of surface at different times in the day. That's the circadian rhythm.
Okay.
So each hormone has its own rhythm. And at night, when your cortisol levels are supposed to be low, cortisol is your stress hormone.
Okay.
It's your aging hormone. And if your cortisol levels are not working, if they're not on the proper circadian rhythms, then what they will do is interfere with your body's ability to produce hormones like testosterone. So remember that cortisol is a fight-or-flight hormone. So if during our evolution, of course, if you were running away from a lion, you would produce lots of cortisol, lots of adrenaline, because you had to run away from that lion, or you had to run to kill your prey. You know, that's when you're going to produce these fight or flight hormones. And remember, when you're in that stress zone, there's no time for sex. There's no time for eating. There's no time for sleeping. So remember that cortisol will interfere with all of those different systems in your body if you don't know how to be in a completely relaxed state.
So, how do we get, and what do we need to do to make sure we get that restful night's sleep? Let's go back in the day. I mean, obviously, I'm not thinking about sleep when I first get up, but how far back, if I go to bed typically at 10 o'clock at night, when do I start to prepare my body to go to sleep? Can we work backwards?
Well, I think, around dinner, the dinner hour is when you want to be able to start putting yourself into this parasympathetic or this very relaxed state. You don't want to do anything overly stimulating after dinner. So, of course, strenuous exercise would be out of the question, because what that's going to do is increase your cortisol, and that's not what you want before you go to bed. You want to make sure your cortisol levels are low. So, taking a hot bath can do wonders for people who are having trouble falling asleep. Now, remember, the sleep disorders that we see, I see anyway, that are most common are the ones where people have trouble falling asleep or they have trouble staying asleep. And there are many, many reasons why this is happening, but I believe one of the primary reasons is because people cannot, they do not know how to control their cortisol levels or their stress hormone. So a nice hot bath is a great way to help bring down that cortisol so that you're more prepared for a good night's sleep. And other things that you can do, of course, would be to listen to relaxing music, not the, you know, rock or, you know, very, very stimulating music, because again, that's going to overstimulate you and interfere with your ability to fall asleep. There are other things, like a lot of people, of course, are addicted to caffeine. It's one of our number one addictive substances that we're consuming on a daily basis. And if you are having trouble sleeping, you do really want to avoid caffeine. I think caffeine is fine in small amounts for people who are healthy and don't have sleep problems. But for people who do have sleep problems, you need to cut it out of your life.
Now, if I have, I usually have two coffees in the day, which by most accounts, you know, you'd probably like me to get down to one or zero, but I'm certainly not eight coffees a day. What's the latest I should be taking caffeine before I go to bed?
Well, I think, you know, you don't want to really drink it past noon if you can avoid that, certainly.
Okay.
One or two cups, like if you're pretty healthy, Tom, and you're not having problems with your sleep, you may be fine with that quantity.
Okay, so I seem to be getting a good night's sleep, and I'll go over that in a bit, maybe some tips for other people, but certainly not 6 o'clock at night, that post-dinner tea, with most people think, oh, this will be relaxing, let's have a tea after dinner. That can really interfere with your sleep, can it?
Well, that's an interesting point. Tea is an interesting substance because in tea you have the caffeine, although it's a smaller amount than you'd find in coffee. But tea also contains an amino acid called theanine, and theanine can actually help relax you.
Oh, okay.
So for some people, tea may not be such a bad choice.
Oh, all right. Coffee certainly isn't a good choice then.
No, not certainly after dinner.
Okay, not after dinner. Okay, tea. One of the other things is people find that regular exercise helps them sleep, but certainly not, and I find this as well, certainly not close to bedtime. That the closer you are to bedtime, exerting yourself in an exercise format, I find it gets me too wired, and I find it tough to fall asleep. Is that common?
That's very, very common. I mean, some of the worst sleepers I talked to were the ones who are doing very, very strenuous activity even during the course of the day. These are the people who are, you know, jogging on treadmills or using elliptical machines or what have you. So they're constantly pushing out their stress hormones, keeping them high, and that's not what you want. The human body is supposed to be in a parasympathetic state.
What do you mean by that?
That means a state of resting and digesting. That's where that's the optimal state for a human. And when you're constantly stressing your adrenal glands, those are your basic batteries to your body. If you're wearing down your battery, of course, that's just not a very wise thing to do, because your adrenal glands are controlling. They're the ones that are putting out these stress hormones, and they're also controlling things like your mineral balance. And because your minerals play such a huge role in terms of the production of your neurotransmitters and your hormones, you really, really want to take care of those adrenal glands.
What about an exercise like yoga? Mm-hmm. Which we often think is stress-reducing and peaceful and relaxing. Is an exercise like yoga decent to do in the evening?
Well, absolutely, even during the course of the day. Oftentimes what I have to teach my students is to find ways to train your body to be in this parasympathetic or relaxed state. And during the course of the day, of course, yoga, meditation, tai chi, qigong, all of these very relaxing movements and activities are the ones that help you retrain those adrenal glands so that they are in that parasympathetic or relaxed state.
All right, so that's the type of activity. What about, you talked about music being stressful. What about other electronic diversions? Can I watch TV, or is it better to read? Should I be, doing my email, or is it better to just do something less stimulating?
Yeah, you want to basically just do things that are obviously not going to stress you. Watching the news before you go to bed at night, where you're watching all sorts of bad news, violent crimes, whatever, those things you probably want to avoid before you go to bed at night. So more of a positive, if you are watching TV, probably more like a comedy, something lighter, something that doesn't stress you as much. If you are reading your emails and that is going to de-stress you, then that's fine. But the electronic devices in your room is also something that I would discourage because, number one, they can be putting out all sorts of, you know, stray voltage or what is known as electrosmog, and that can interrupt your circadian rhythms. That can interrupt your body's electrical circuits, if you will. And where children are concerned, that's a whole other story because if they have the electrical devices in their rooms, they're going to potentially use them and stay up and play video games, for example, until 1 o'clock in the morning or what have you. And our children today, more and more research is surfacing to show that our children are simply not getting enough sleep. And it's not just because of caffeinated beverages. It's because of these electronic devices that are in their bedrooms.
Artificial light by any means. The fact that we can extend the day through not just overhead lights, but now we have games and technology to, you know, that seem to be much more attractive than going to sleep.
Well, what you want is you want to make sure your room is completely pitch black. Any light actually can trick your body and prevent your body's production of another hormone called melatonin. And when the sun goes down, your body's melatonin production should come up. And melatonin plays a key role in your ability to fall asleep at night. And so any kind of light in your room also will interfere with your sleep by that mechanism. So make sure your room is completely dark.
All right, when we come back, more tips and on how to make sure you get a good night's sleep and how to stay asleep as well. It's one thing to fall asleep, but it's the ability, if you wake up in the middle of the night, to go back to sleep, because I think a lot of people have that problem as well. They can fall asleep, they just can't stay asleep. 18 minutes after 11 o'clock, my name's Tom McConnell. I'm joined by healthy living expert and nutritional consultant Pam Colleen, back to talk about a healthy sleep. After this. 23 minutes after 11 o'clock, Pam Colleen joining us on the program as she does every other week and making sure that you're on with London again this week, even though Andy is off and I'm doing an hour filling in for him. Pam, one note though for our listeners in the Niagara region, you'll be down here not this Saturday, a week from, when are you down here in Niagara to sign a book?
On Saturday, November 26th, from 1 till 5 p.m., I'll be at the Chapters at Fairview Mall.
Place you were last time.
That's right.
Yeah, all right. So just the Chapters over on Fairview Mall, 1 to 5?
1 to 5, Saturday, November 26th.
Okay, all right. And you'll be signing Addiction, the Hidden Epidemic?
That's right. I'll be there to sign that book.
All right. And if you have a question, and of course, it's great to meet people, and of course, because you are so knowledgeable, I'm sure you just don't have people who come up and sign a book. You must have a little bit of a... You occasionally, you've answered a question, I'm sure.
Oh, your listeners are exceptional. You know, they come in and they, pat me on the back and they say, you know, Pam, just keep getting that truth out there, because they're fed up with listening to mainstream media put out one single message. You know, this message that, for example, you know, the low-fat lie, you know, that animal fats join the dark side, or that, you know, eggs are bad for you and red meat is bad for you. I mean, a lot of your listeners have caught on to these myths, and they come and pat me on the back and say, keep going, Pam.
I have a question from Arnie as we get back to sleep. Is chamomile tea or St. John's wort helpful for getting a good night's sleep?
Well, you know, they can be helpful for some individuals. I'm just not a huge fan of herbal remedies myself. I use them very, very small amounts of them, if at all, simply because these herbal remedies are not necessarily tested for heavy metals. And if they do contain heavy metals, they can actually really, really disrupt your biochemistry. So herbal remedies are not my first choice whatsoever.
All right. So go over a list. What should the person do if you have trouble sleeping? What's your best approach to helping a person who has trouble sleeping?
Well, the key thing is to target things that will help relax your adrenal glands, and things like unrefined sea salt. Taking a little bit of unrefined sea salt before you go to bed at night is really, really helpful for relaxing your adrenal glands. And keep in mind that especially when it's a high quality unrefined sea salt, salt is a natural hypnotic, so it will help you fall asleep at night.
Where do I get that? Unrefined sea salt, do I just talk to my grocer?
No, well, they may carry it now. Typically, you find them in the health food stores.
Okay.
What you want to find is a salt that is unrefined, so it should be pink or gray in color, typically.
Okay.
Not always, but typically. And so it's not refined whatsoever. There aren't any other creatures inside of there, like your table salt, for example, that you find on the table of a grocery or of a restaurant. That's sodium chloride. And in it, of course, they add things like aluminum so that it doesn't stick together. So you don't want to use that salt. You want to use an unrefined sea salt.
Okay.
And just taking a pinch and putting it under your tongue before bed at night.
Sublingual. I know that word.
Yes, and if you wake up during the night, if you fall asleep but can't stay asleep, again, you want to take a little bit of salt and see if that doesn't help. Another thing, another great fuel to help relax the adrenal glands is going to be animal fat. So some people, if they eat like chicken skin or something fatty before they go to bed, can really help relax the adrenal glands. High-fat cheese, for example, just taking a few bites of that before you go to bed, that can help relax the adrenal glands as well. So these types of foods are what I would prefer people use in order to help encourage sleep.
Hot bath. Don't do strenuous exercise. And I love, make sure your room is as dark as possible.
Yes.
Don't have the curtains open or a nightlight on.
That's right.
That's going to interfere. All right.
And even your alarm clock radio, that could produce a light. So you want to make sure that isn't on.
Or if it's on, turned away.
Exactly.
27 minutes after 11 o'clock. Can you stick around? Can I talk to you about estrogen and testosterone?
Oh, absolutely.
All right, good. I'm going to talk to you about birth control pills and then what you can do to make sure you have the right amount of estrogen or testosterone. And for men especially, making sure we have anti-estrogen or anti-estrogenic foods to cut down on the amount of estrogen that men are ingesting and are in our body. So when we come back, we'll talk to Pam Colleen a little more about the sex hormones and how to make sure you get your proper amount. News is next. My name's Tom McConnell. You're listening on 1290 CJBK in London and News Talk 610 CKTV in St. Catharines.
Here's Tom McConnell.
34 minutes after 11 o'clock. This is News Talk 610 CKTV. And I know she knows she doesn't mind when I spring a topic on her like I'm about to. But the news came out today, and I'm talking to Pam Colleen, nutritional consultant, healthy living advocate. And researchers at Princess Margaret Hospital looked at prostate cancer in 87 countries, and they found there was a correlation. Yet they've yet to prove a causation, but they found a correlation, Pam, mm-hmm. between the amount of women who use oral contraceptives and the amount and rising rates of prostate cancer among men in the world. And they said there's a very strong correlation between female use of oral contraceptions and new cases of prostate cancer and mortality from prostate cancer. And they believe if this is true and there was a causation, the mechanism is that women excrete estrogen from their pills into the water, and then it gets into the water supply, and men in very low doses are consuming more estrogen than they should.
Right.
Now, if we can't control estrogen going into the water, how do men control estrogen in their body? Because there are foods out there that contain phytoestrogens or have estrogen-like properties that we consume on a regular basis that men don't even give a second thought about.
Right. And then, yeah, these are the foods, even the World Health Organization under the United Nations, the Food and Agriculture Organization have acknowledged as being anti-cancer foods. And these would be your fermented foods like sauerkraut. Sauerkraut is one of the best medicines one can consume, I think, on a daily basis, along with eating their paradigm of eating 3 square meals, which is what we talk about a lot on your show. But adding a little bit of sauerkraut for lunch, for dinner, is fantastic because the sauerkraut, contains compounds, many anti-cancer compounds. One of them that will help deal with this excess estrogen is something called indole-3-carbinol, and that is why eating, these fermented foods like sauerkraut is so incredibly medicinal.
One of the other anti-estrogenic foods, I heard broccoli, even though broccoli or Brussels sprouts also
have... Well, it's all those, Tom, it's all of the sulfur-containing vegetables. So broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, all of these sulfur-containing vegetables contain this...
And that's why sauerkraut, because it's cabbage.
Right, but you don't want to eat these vegetables raw. That's one thing you don't want to do, because there are anti-nutrients in there. That are not good to eat, in their pure state. So you want some preparation involved with eating these sulfur-containing vegetables. So cooking them, of course, lightly cooking them, just a little bit or whatever, that's good. And then, of course, that's an excuse to pound on the butter because you want that butter in there as well. And then, of course, another way to prepare them is through fermentation. So that I say sauerkraut because it's the most recognizable fermented vegetable.
Right. Okay. All right. So so sulfur, what was it? So I'm looking for foods that are sulfur compounds in them.
Yes, and even eggs, of course, are high in sulfur, and we're not getting enough sulfur in our diets, period. And sulfur is crucial for detoxification, period. And this is, this is one of a very pervasive problem, again, that very few people are talking about. But sulfur is very, very important. We're not detoxifying a lot of these, they're basically estrogen-mimicking compounds. You know, they're man-made in many cases.
Right.
And we're not able, we don't have the ability to detoxify them anymore. And that's the problem, is that we're so weak in terms of our digestion, we're so weak in terms of our ability to detoxify, that these compounds are building up in our body. And doing something like eating sauerkraut on a daily basis will help improve your detoxification of these, hormone-mimicking compounds.
Now, as well, because this is Movember, and I'm growing a mustache to promote prostate cancer awareness, and now I'm learning more and more about the compounds in our body, especially for men, that there's a link between an increase in estrogen and prostate cancer, but also a decrease in testosterone. That for men, when you get that balance, there's still that men still produce much more testosterone than estrogen. But as that ratio lowers, we seem to have a higher incident of prostate cancer.
Right. So there's something, though, that it ties into a lot of this, and that has to do with heavy metals, Tom. And one thing that is happening because of excess estrogen and copper, the metal copper,
okay,
they go up and down with each other. So as people increase their copper intake, and we get copper through drinking city water, for example, so copper will push up estrogen as well. And when you push up estrogen, then down goes the testosterone. And so you cause a havoc with regards to your hormones. And when, of course, copper becomes excessive, then zinc will be depleted, because zinc and copper are antagonistic minerals. And so one of the problems with men, of course, is that they're zinc deficient.
Right.
And
that's key for testosterone.
Yes, and so that's why it's so important to eat things like red meat. Unfortunately, today we've been scared off of eating red meat, and we're just not getting enough zinc in our diets. So we need to create that very precious balance between zinc and copper, both for women who, want to have healthy cycles and so on, want to be fertile. You need to create a healthy balance between zinc and copper. And for men, the same thing with the prostate. They need to create a healthy balance between zinc and copper. And with all of these outside agents interfering with that balance, this is another big issue. Very few people know about this problem. And if they do know about it, they don't necessarily know how to fix that problem. And it is a very difficult balance to create, because there's just so many competing factors out there today.
So how do I check? Can I take a blood test to check what my copper and zinc levels are? Or how would I determine if my copper and zinc levels aren't right?
Well, actually, that's what I do through hair analysis. I can see it through hair analysis.
Okay.
And hair analysis is, regulated by, the U.S. government. The EPA acknowledges the importance of hair analysis. The U.S. military acknowledges the importance of hair analysis. So hair analysis is a really good way to test to see where your zinc and copper levels are at. But if you don't have access to these, these types of tests, then certainly always remember you need to get enough red meat in your diet to offset the building of copper in your body.
Now, as well, how about this? I go into the bookstore. So you're going to Chapters next Saturday. Mm-hmm. I'm in Chapters maybe a week or so ago, and I go buy this book. This is probably your nightmare in terms of how the average person learns stuff, okay? So imagine I'm a typical Pam. I went by a book on display. I randomly flipped it open and I read this fact, and I want to know what you think about it. But a lot of people get their information just not through intensive study and learning. It's almost through randomly acquired facts that stick with them. Mm-hmm. I heard from men that because, and we talked about this earlier, eating testosterone production happens at night. And so you want to make sure you get a good sleep that's not disrupted, but you want to have the building blocks there for testosterone as well. And because cholesterol gets converted into testosterone, and as long as we have proper, you know, you talk about the zinc balance and that eating a couple of hard-boiled eggs before you go to bed at night, and then maybe having some Brazil nuts because they're high in selenium, mm-hmm. will help you boost your testosterone levels. And this was a book called 4-Hour Body, which I'm like, there's no way you can make a body in 4 hours. But I thought, I'm going to turn open this page. I randomly found that fact. Is that true or not? Or I mean,
you know, I don't know how they measure that. I don't have any problem with anybody eating eggs and Brazil nuts before bed at all. I think that's a great night.
Oh, okay. Snack. All right. So this and as you said, I mean, fatty foods before bed can help you get a better sleep. But also the cholesterol in the eggs. And because there's such cholesterol is such a boogeyman among people, even though dietary cholesterol is different than, you know, cholesterol in the blood serum. So you have to make sure you get proper dietary cholesterol and proper healthy fats, and eggs are proper healthy fats. And because it can be a building block, or is used as directly a building block for testosterone, that this is, especially men as we get older, naturally our testosterone production declines very slightly. But every year, if it's declining very slightly, it means by the time we're 70, we don't have that, and this is where we see a rise in prostate cancer as we get older.
There's one other thing, though, Tom, I didn't get a chance to mention about metals. And there is an association between nickel and prostate cancer as well, and this is very, very important because nickel is a very pervasive heavy metal, and it can accumulate in the body.
Okay.
And I want to point out that one of the sources of nickel, of course, is going to be your hydrogenated fats. So nickel is actually used during the hydrogenation process. And so if you're eating processed foods or using margarines or spreads or what have you, then you're probably taking in way too much nickel, and that too will associate itself with prostate cancer. There are other sources of nickel out there as well, and you have to be very, very careful. You can find this information easily online, but even instant coffee is a source of nickel, and what's something you want to stay away from as well.
Wow. All right. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, make sure if you want to go the next step and do hair analysis, but make sure you have a sufficient supply of zinc in your diet. Mm-hmm. And that will balance out your copper, but make sure you get good, healthy fats that Pam is always espousing. And eggs are coming back into being one of these superfoods again.
Absolutely.
That
and
eggs are just...
Meats.
Yeah.
Organ meats are another great source as well. So, and again, that's another food that's been heavily, heavily demonized. But certainly the healthiest cultures in the world out there were the ones who ate organ meats as well.
And you know what? And you look back, and I know organ meats were cheaper, but there's a reason why society not necessarily didn't throw out anything, but they stayed away from things that weren't healthy. It wasn't just because, oh, liver's cheap or organ meats are cheaper and you got to sell the whole cow. It's no. Ancient societies or older societies ate organ meats because they knew inherently they were healthier. Look at Michael Jean when she went up to the Arctic and had seal heart. You know, look at some of the liver, you know, from some animals is considered, you know, the good stuff. It's because they know that's the healthiest part of the animal.
When we were hunter-gatherers, the first part of the animal we always ate were the organ meats, right? So we ate the organ meats first before we ate the muscle meats.
Yeah, I read a great article on a guy whose favorite food, he was a chef, and his favorite food was when he went to Italy, caught a boar, and drank the blood. And he says it was the richest meal he's ever had, that blood was so intense. It not only flavor, but he felt it was so good for him that he was like, he'll never forget it.
In Africa, the certain cultures around the world, they do drink blood. And the Maasai tribe in Africa is renowned for their consumption of drinking blood. They also consume a lot of raw milk and meat. And they're, you know, explorers have lived with the Maasai and noted how incredibly healthy they were. Unfortunately, it's not necessarily the same case today because of modernization, but if they're remote tribes, they still have a chance at health if they still have their traditional foods.
Pam, always a pleasure. We'll talk in a couple of weeks as you get us ready. Maybe, it'll be the end of December or end of November. Well, we'll see what we'll talk about in 2 weeks. Maybe better eating in the holiday period.
That would be a great topic.
Always a pleasure. Take care.
Thanks so much, Tom. Take care.
You're welcome. Pam, Colleen, don't forget, Pam has a book signing coming up, not Saturday, a week from Saturday. A week from Saturday, Pam has a book signing coming up at the Fairview Mall Chapters location, 1 to 5. I'll keep you updated on that because I know a lot of you will have questions or you want to get your book signed by Pam. No problem.